Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review, who's also the author of The Weed Agency. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for you, as usual. We actually start with the bad today, Jim. Monday, a very big news day on a number of fronts. We talked about the Supreme Court decisions yesterday. We found out that those three Israeli teenagers were killed yesterday. So a lot of news yesterday, some of it good for the right, some of it just awful all the way around. For the bad martini today, we talk about the president and his Rose Garden statement about deciding to take executive action on immigration reform because he's been informed by House Speaker John Boehner that there's not going to be a House vote on it anytime this year. So here's the president's rationale for why he takes executive action instead of getting congressional approval for things, which is what that Constitution requires. Here's what he said.
I don't prefer taking administrative action. I'd rather see permanent fixes to the issue we face. Certainly that's true on immigration. I would greatly prefer Congress actually do something. I take executive action only when we have a serious problem, a serious issue, and Congress chooses to do nothing. And that's why today I'm beginning an effort to fix as much of our immigration system as I can on my own, without Congress.
Jim, I'm curious which Federalist paper it's in that the Congress shall make the laws unless they don't decide to do it, and then the president can do whatever he wants.
This ranks high on our bad martini list because, first of all, are you kind of struck by how much Obama talks as if he is the only president who's ever had an opposition party control Congress?
Right.
I mean, this is like really standard operating procedure. And the idea that, you know, oh, John Boehner is so much more difficult to work with than Nancy Pelosi was. or you know, ask Bill Clinton how great it was to work with Newt Gingrich, or Bob Dole and Trent Lott, or Dennis Hastert or something like that, or go back to George H.W. Bush and Mitchell, or Reagan and Tip O'Neill. Like, it's actually fairly normal to have the opposition party controlling Congress, and you got to work with them. And what it really requires is you only get part of what you want. Obama keeps insisting that the Congress refuses to do anything on the border. A soundingly implausible claim to say if you went to everybody in Congress, nobody wants to do anything. Obama, you know, posing as if he's the only adult in the room. Now he's saying he's the only person who wants to address a problem. Everyone else is perfectly fine with this children's crusade coming across our southern border, border patrol agents having to change diapers and things like that. Now, so there's that, you know, agonizing kind of aspect of it. This is where, like, way back when, in 2007, 2008, all of us, like, you know, he hasn't run anything. He's been in the Senate for about 10 minutes, and then he decided to run for president. Obama doesn't actually like the job of being president, and he interprets it very differently than what it actually is. Because a lot of being president, looking back at George W. Bush, Bill Clinton, George H.W. Bush, Ronald Reagan, I mean, Jimmy Carter was the last president who had a Congress that was mostly of his own party. And if you go back and read about the Carter years, he was fighting with Tip O'Neill and other Democrats pretty frequently during his presidency. It's normal to have a Congress that won't do exactly what you want. And Obama just can't seem to deal with this. I guess nobody gave him this kind of grief at the law library. Nobody gave him this kind of problem back in his community activism days and stuff like that. He just can't seem to reach any type of agreement with any Republican on anything. Once you do that, you're an utter failure as a leader. And now I just got to stop because we've got to move on to the kind of surprisingly good martinis, Greg.
Yeah, exactly right. So the president did this in the Rose Garden just a couple hours after we got the Supreme Court decision on the HHS mandate. And as Jonathan Turley, who's been very critical of Obama's use of executive power, said on CNN, this has not exactly been a great week and a half for the guy.
You know, this has been an awful 10 days. You know, they were previously found to be in violation of the Fourth Amendment and privacy. Then they were found to be in violation of the separation of powers. And now they've been found to be in violation of the First Amendment and the religion clauses. I mean, you just don't want to get out of bed after a week like that.
In addition to the HHS mandate, referring to the recess appointment case, as well as the needing a warrant to search cell phones. And then when it comes to the president's comments on what he plans to do with immigration policy, Jeffrey Toobin, not exactly a right-wing ideologue, said maybe not so fast.
And in fact, one of the lines that sort of jumped out at me, he said, and I'm paraphrasing, but a close paraphrase, I take these executive actions when we have a problem and Congress refuses to act. Well, that's not necessarily the way the Constitution set it up. He can only act when Article 2 of the Constitution says the president has the authority.
And we should point out that two of the three decisions that Turley referred to were unanimous. The only one that wasn't was the HHS mandate case. So for those who actually know the law, notwithstanding the constitutional lawyer in the White House, as the White House press secretary put it yesterday, it looks like those who actually know what they're talking about know that Obama's not exactly following Article 2 here.
There's two schools of thought. I mean, the first is like, you know, oh my goodness, Obama doesn't understand the Constitution, and it's, you know, he's basically now like a child throwing a tantrum. I want what I want, by golly, and why won't you let me do what I want and stuff like that? Why are the Supreme Court and Congress picking on me? But there's kind of a flip side to this. When Obama says he's a constitutional law professor at the University of Chicago, all that kind of stuff, you kind of wonder if, like, all of his interest in the Constitution and kind of adopting this area of legal thought and all that kind of stuff was not because he loved the Constitution and he thought the Constitution was so terrific and he liked it, but that he kind of was irked by it. Then there's a kind of a whole philosophy amongst liberal legal minds, which is that, you know, the Constitution is this terribly flawed document because it's all about negative freedom. Congress can't restrict your speech. Congress can't restrict your religion. Congress can't do these things instead of what the government must do for you. And everyone kind of chuckles and says, you know, you have freedom of speech, but, you know, where's my printing press? Where's my broadcast network? Where's my ability to have all these things? And there are certain liberals who think very seriously that the Constitution should be based upon what they characterize as positive freedoms, meaning things you are entitled to. In order to be a free American, you must have these things provided to you. This is where you get into this, you know, health care, or health care is a human right. And the problem with that thinking is that for all the other rights that you have, you just have them, right? In order to enjoy that right, we need to stop the government from doing things to you. For if you, once you start thinking about, oh, healthcare is a human right, well, somebody's got to get that doctor to give it to you, and that nurse, and everybody, you know, the MRI machine, all these things that come in the process of giving you healthcare. You know, perhaps Obama, like, you know, is losing 9-0 on so many of these things and running himself into so much trouble because the entire philosophy of how the government should operate and the purpose of government in the United States is completely contrary to about 43 presidents who have come before him. Including, you know, the Bill Clintons and Jimmy Carters of the world, who we traditionally think of as Democrats, but who did not like to take such a wholesale, I'm going to ignore the rest of government mentality to this. And we really have, like, the intriguing thing would be when he goes into something that's really kind of dangerous. Because when he violated, say, for example, the War Powers Act, he did in Libya, and most Americans completely ignored our military action in Libya. Obama gets away with doing a lot of this stuff because it's on a fairly small scale, but you can kind of see it bit by bit. The scale is getting larger. I mean, you're starting to see the folks like Toobin, who is such a usually, you know, a pretty reliable fan of the president. When he starts clearing his throat and saying, Mr. President, you don't have this power under the Constitution, that's really the canary in the coal mine for the Obama administration.
Yeah, well, very surprising, but still good to hear that some people actually remember their law school training. Speaking of which, one of the best-known legal correspondents in Washington is NPR's Nina Totenberg. Even those on the right believe she has a pretty good read on the court and can sift through a decision faster than just about anyone. She was one of the first to accurately figure out what the court had done in Bush v. Gore many years ago. She was a guest on MSNBC, I believe on The Cycle, yesterday, and so they asked her what she thought the long-range impact of the Hobby Lobby decision would be, and she went into areas that other legal scholars might find a tad questionable.
It's not at all clear where the majority will lie, for example, in challenges to certain sex discrimination practices that may occur, that somebody will say that's against my religious belief, cases involving gays and lesbians, or cases involving people from foreign origins. It's just not clear.
This is seeming to a lot of people like a pretty big reach, that just because we're only going to cover 16 out of 20 possible birth control methods, that all of a sudden we're going to stop hiring and start firing people based on gender and ethnicity.
Well, I suppose there's no women playing in the NBA right now, right, Greg?
Right.
No women playing in the NFL. I mean, like, you know, gender discrimination is alive and well, Mr. Corumbus. You know, this is nothing to chuckle about. Something kind of jumps out about the reaction to this Hobby Lobby case. And Totenberg is not necessarily the worst example of this, but I think if you get down to the lefty grassroots level and kind of the reaction you saw online, which was just volcanic for a good portion of yesterday, John Roberts, who 2 years ago, when he upheld Obamacare, was suddenly, you know, suddenly he's King Solomon or handing down the Code of Hammurabi, the wisest jurist of our time. He goes against the liberals, and all of a sudden he's back to being Torquemada again. And liberals seem blindsided by this decision and said that they were comparing it to the Spanish Inquisition. But we shouldn't be surprised, because no one expects the Spanish Inquisition, Greg Corumbus. to cite the legal experts, Monty Python. One of the things that kind of jumps out about this is that ultimately, you look at the modern left today, we remember them, booing God at the Democratic Convention in 2012. And this is a movement that really, really disdains religious people. And the world is full of religious beliefs that some Americans may find strange. I just put up on Campaign Spot, Orthodox Jews don't work on the Sabbath. And most of us don't have a problem with that. That may not be something we do, but by golly, if an Orthodox Jew doesn't want to do it, go ahead, you do that. And we probably feel very unnerved about the government coming in and saying, you have to work on the Sabbath. Or telling a Muslim, you have to handle pork products. I'm telling a Mormon they got to drink, or a Christian Scientist they have to smoke. I mean, people have religious beliefs. And if we're going to, the government's going to come in and say, no, your religious belief does not matter enough. We are going to make you do something that violates your conscience and violates your religious beliefs. Boy, there better be a really, really good reason. And you look over the whole jurisprudence history on this stuff. I mean, you're allowed to practice to sacrifice animals. The Supreme Court case about Santeria. Certain states allow you to use peyote in religious ceremonies if it's a genuine Native American one. Like, we've traditionally defined religious liberty pretty darn broadly in this country. We're not willing to pay for this because we think it is akin to murder. Now, you may think they're completely wrong on that, but it is a very big step to say, not only are they wrong on that, we will not allow them to live by that belief. We're going to force them to pay for something that they consider to be murder. And most of us would kind of recoil from that kind of mentality of government and say it's very un-American. It's not in keeping with our traditions. It's not in keeping with, like, kind of the ideals and the founding of this country. But there's a big chunk of the left that basically says, no, the purpose of government is to re-educate you. The purpose of government is to steer you away from these primitive and silly beliefs and to get you to adopt the ways of your betters, in which all 20 of these forms of birth control are hunky-dory and there's no objections to be had. Look, that's almost a separate question here. The real question is, are you free to disagree with this assessment? Are you free to follow your conscience? And to a big chunk of the left, ironically, the answer is no. And that's kind of a scary thing here. Nina Totenberg can kind of, gussy it up and raise all these troubling questions and stuff like that. But ultimately, I think a lot of yesterday's reaction was driven by this very ugly, I think you might even say hateful form of intolerance.
Mr. Garrity, well done. Well said.
Anytime we get to call the liberals intolerant, it's kind of a good day.
Jim, very well done. Have a great day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to join us again on Wednesday for the next edition of the 3 Martini Lunch.